I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Mark Levy. Mark is the founder of Levy Innovation LLC, a positioning firm that helps consultants and other thought leaders to increase their fees by up to 2,000%. His clients include a former department head in the White House, CEOs of major organizations, a former head of the strategy unit of the Harvard Business School, a member of Major League Baseball, and TED and TEDx speakers. Before devoting his work full-time to Levy Innovation, Mark served as chief marketing officer at an Inc. 5000 experiential branding organization with clients such as Gap, Samsung, Time Warner, and Harvard and Stanford universities. He's written for the New York Times and has written or co-created 5 books, including Accidental Genius, Using Writing to Generate Your Best Ideas, Insight, and Content, which has been translated into 10 languages. Mark also created the O'Reilly video course, Influencing People Honestly, which teaches leaders how to persuade ethically and openly. In addition to being a positioning consultant, Mark creates magic tricks and shows. His work has been performed in Carnegie Hall and Las Vegas and on all the major TV networks. Mark, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much, David. I appreciate it. So did you memorize my bio or were you reading it?
I'll be honest, I was reading your bio. I would love that I memorize everybody's bio, but you probably wouldn't want to hear what comes out of my mouth.
Right. I'm sure it would be distinguished. Anyone who has a hyphenated name like you do, it's got to be distinguished.
You're very kind, Mark. So Mark, I know you have a great story because you and I chatted a little bit beforehand. Yes. How have you smashed the plateau?
Yeah, well, thank you for that. So years ago, I mean like 25 years ago or so, I worked for book wholesalers. And so what we would do is we would buy millions of dollars worth of books from publishing houses like Random House and Simon & Schuster. And then we'd sell them. We were middlemen. We'd sell them to Barnes & Nobles and Borders and independent bookshops and all these places. And so I very, very quickly understood why books should sell or why it shouldn't sell. And by the way, in the book wholesaling business, I had the exact same books that my competitors had. And by the way, my customers already knew these books were coming out anyway. They had them too. So I ended up, though, helping my firm sell over $1 billion worth of books. And so these were on pure commodities. So again, it was looking at the book and saying, ah, here's why the book should sell, here's why it shouldn't sell. And by the way, sometimes the ideas about the book sellability didn't even reside in the book. Maybe it had to do with what was happening out in the political environment or something. You know what I mean? That changed the context of why the book would sell or not sell. So I did that gig for like, I don't know, like 14 years. I was a director. I was a salesperson selling all this stuff. But then after a while, being a middleman can be tiring, you know, because you're trying to affect change out there, but you have to wait for, you know, to be given the product, you know, that kind of thing. So I said, and also the whole concept of being a middleman was changing with the internet. The internet was starting up in a big way then. So it was like, yeah, I don't see the middleman hanging around too much. So I said, I need to change this. I need to make a change in my life. And at the same time, I had also been interested in a hobby that it started when I was 4 years old. I was super interested in magic, right? I used to create magic tricks. I used to create magic shows. I used to perform magic. And so it was kind of taking these two ideas in my life. One about, oh, I could size up what makes a book sellable and not, and I could really sell it. You know, I had to sell it to clients. And also this idea of looking at the world through the lens the way a magician does it, you know, because a magician has to look at things that are very ordinary. And then from that, we have to create something miraculous. right? That's essential that you use ordinary properties. Like if I wheeled out some bizarre looking box with all kinds of painted dragon stencils on it, like that, like, or flashing lights on it, you would say, and I produced something amazing from that box, you would still say, well, maybe that's just a property of that box. You know, like, right. I don't know what that box is supposed to do. So you can't do that. You have to use stuff that's lying around, like coins and, you know, cards and things that people know what they are, you know, dollar bills or so. So it was this idea of magicians look at what's ordinary and try to create something miraculous from it. And this idea that I could size up why something should sell or shouldn't sell so quickly, that I kind of combine those ideas. And I started my own business, which is I'm a positioning consultant. So what it is consultants and other thought leaders hire me to increase their fees by up to 2,000%. I do that predominantly in two ways. The first way is, again, I'm a positioning guy, so I help people come up with their big, sexy idea, their signature idea, the idea they're going to be known for throughout the marketplace. And I make sure it comes through loud and clear in everything they do, like in their website copy or their elevator speeches, so that anyone in the marketplace who falls in love with that idea has to seek my client out, because my client embodies that idea in people's minds. He represents that idea. So that's the first thing. It's helping to position people around the big, sexy idea. The second thing I do is I coach my clients to write books and to give speeches to use as skyrockets for their business. So in order to make those kinds of big things happen in clients' life, I use both the skills that I had learned from selling books. It's like, okay, why should this sell? Why shouldn't this sell? What's happening in the world that would make it sell? What's not happening? And then the idea of a magician, where you have to take ordinary things and then amplify their worth or amplify their value or make them about a theme that's huge, you know, like life, death, you know, dreams, wonder. Like, how do you do that? So it was kind of combining these things together. And that's how I got the business I do now.
You know, Mark, it sounds like the absolute perfect fit for who you are based on your story and what I know about you. I'm just really curious, if you were to go back to the beginning of your professional career, is there any way that you would have predicted that you would end up being a positioning consultant?
Let's see. No. Yeah, that's a great, no one's ever asked me that before. Going back to the beginning of my career. No, not at all. Because the thing about being a positioning consultant is all the whole time I'm working with clients and we're making very big decisions on what their business should be about and how they should live their lives. You know what I mean? And even though my client in the end, they're the ones who say, yes, this is the idea, or, you know, this is how I want my business to be or so, you know, I'm still there as a sounding board for them. You know, I'm listening to what they have to say and I'm offering guidance. And like the fact that I would be working on something so important with people all day long is mind blowing to me. But actually, now that I say this, oh, you're very good, David. Because now that I'm saying this, I actually remember a very key point here. Early in my career, and I mean this happened like 25 years ago or so, I was on the sales staff of a book wholesaler, and I just love books to pieces. To me, they're humankind's highest achievement. I just think so much of books, and especially if you're a bookstore. I mean, it's actually like how you make your money is selling books. So anyway, I remember that a client of my company's called up and was angry that they hadn't gotten some big shipment of books, like in before Christmas, that they could sell, something like that. And I remember someone in the hierarchy of the company, he was complaining after the client got off the phone. I remember him saying, saying to the entire room, it was like a boiler room situation. You know, he said, these are books we're talking about. This isn't plasma. Like, these people need to calm down. And I remember hearing that and saying, you know what? This is plasma. You know what I mean? Like, these are books. This is one of humankind's most important achievements. And by the way, this is how the store, like, this is what their reputation rides on. This is how they stay in business. This is how they make things happen. Like, this is plasma. We're selling plasma. Like, that's what this guy's not getting. We are selling plasma. And I remember after hearing that, him say that, and it so annoyed me. I said, any business I'm ever in, I made this pledge to myself, any business I'm ever in, I always want to be working on what's most important to my client. I never want to be working on a sideline business for them. You know, like, sometimes people call me and I'll listen to what it is they're saying. And if I think repositioning their business just seems like a nice thing for them, I know that sounds odd, but sometimes I get people, I think, who are testing the waters. Like, if they don't really sound psyched about it, or this is essential or something, I turn them down because, like, we're not going to be working on plasma. So I have no interest in working on it then.
So that being said, how do you know if you are a consultant or a thought leader? How do you know if being able to identify that big thing for your business is plasma, that you're at the point where you really need to figure this out?
Yeah, good question. So you're saying when they come, you're saying on like that initial call.
Right, like even before they come to you, it's like, how do you know that you haven't found that big thing? And if that's really what you're missing or what you're missing most?
Yeah. So, well, one thing is, obviously, if you're not making the money that you feel, right, if there's certain financial things that are happening, you know, the business needs to be making more. I mean, obviously, that's an essential thing. Or you're getting a lot of complaints, and so you need to change things. So that's essential. But to me, here's my own private answer to that. Like, all that stuff's true, but to me, you really need to change when you're talking to people and they ask you about what it is you do for a living and you're not super proud of what it is you say. You know, that you actually like are kind of hangdog when you're answering them, or you're bored with yourself. You know, because like, if, you know, for instance, I always know I need to be doing a new project, a new book, a new speech, a new offering or something. When someone says, hey, Mark, what are you up to? And I say, oh, you know, I'm like, I have great clients. We're doing great work or whatnot. But like, I don't have anything super specific and cool to tell them that stands out from the rest. Like, that is almost instantly, it almost becomes a design parameter. Okay, I need to come up with something that I'm going to be proud of talking about. Again, not that I'm not proud of the work that I'm doing, but it's like something out of the ordinary. I'm always looking to boost things, including the client work that I do. I'm always looking to boost things out of the ordinary. A very important design parameter when I'm working with clients very early on, if we start talking about a dream they're having, about something it is they want to do with their business or a speech or a book, and a very early question I'll ask them is, okay, so in doing this, what's going to scare you about it? Like, you know, okay, let's say you want to, you know, do X. What about X would really scare you? And they, if they say to me, oh, yeah, well, nothing in X would scare me, I'd say, no. You don't understand the question I'm asking. What could you, if you really pushed it in Project X, what would really scare you? And then they'd say, oh, well, you know, and now they have all kinds of things to say. Like, if I tried to sell to a higher level of person, if I tried to get out there in a bigger way, if I told this story that I've never told before. And I am always, again, it's always up to the client what it is they want to do, but I'm always pushing people to do things that scare them because I feel, and I, you know, I'm not talking about bungee jumping or something like that, right? I'm talking about things that relate to the work, because I always think, I actually end one of my books this way, Accidental Genius, I quote the writer, Mark Bowden, who wrote the book Black Hawk Down, and he wrote a lot, he's an investigative reporter, writes lots of books like that about Saddam Hussein, I forget, killing Pablo. Anyway, so Mark Bowden said in an interview once, a writer should always be working on the most ambitious thing that they've ever written. And so, David, that advice to me doesn't just go for the writer. It goes for the writer. You should always be working on the most ambitious thing. But if you're going to give a speech, if you're going to reposition your business, if you're going to take a new job, if you're going to be managing, if you're already like senior VP or directors, you know, and like initiatives you're going to take on, it's like, what's the most ambitious thing we could be doing? And that is always what I'm pushing people to do. You know what I mean? That's what to me is exciting about life. And I think I told you this, by the way, before we started speaking today. I actually recently, so I've always been in that challenge mode, in that scare mode. But actually recently, about like a month or so ago, I saw a quote that was attributed to Eleanor Roosevelt. And I did some research, and there's nowhere I can't find that Eleanor Roosevelt really said this. But nevertheless, the idea is something that I've taken as a personal design parameter. The quote was, do one thing every day that scares you. So the thing that makes that different than what I just told you before about how I push clients is the idea of every day. So every single day, since I learned that quote, I am always doing at least one thing, if not multiple things that scare me. It's almost like if it scares me, it means I should do it. You know, most people say, oh yeah, it scares me. That means I'm going to step away from it. With me, it's like, oh, it scares me. Well, here I go.
I would say, I think most people don't even think about it. It scares them. They just run away.
That's right.
As opposed to saying, oh, this is scaring me. Why is it scaring me? What should I do about it?
That's right. Well, by the way, you're more thoughtful than I am. I operate more like in a knee-jerk way. I'm like a bumper sticker thinker. You know, so the way I use it, when I say it to myself, it just takes away any hesitation at all. I'll give you a very small example. So I've used this philosophy. I'm starting to write a new book. I'm doing all kinds of things. But even in a daily way, not everything is going to be huge. So I work out a lot. I enjoy working out. I enjoy strength training. And so, for instance, I was doing box jumps. And anyone out there knows what box jumps are, right? You're standing in one spot and you heave yourself up and you jump on top of a box. And then they have different size boxes or stools. One's 12 inches, one's 18 inches, one's 24 inches, one's 30 inches, and so forth. You have to develop to get up there from a standstill jump. And so I had just reached a new level, like I had finished an old level. And on this newer level, it's a metal stool in front of me that's high. And I kept on wavering. I kept standing there, like getting into position to jump, and then I'd stop, get into position and jump, and then I'd stop. And I did this for like a minute. And then finally, when I was wavering once more, I suddenly remembered, do one thing every day that scares you. And in 1 second, like there was no deliberation. There was no disputation or anything. It was just boom. And I jumped up onto the stool. Like, and could I have missed the stool? Sure. But I still would have fulfilled this behavioral contract I had with myself to do one thing every day that scares you. Now, I just want to caution your listeners out there. I'm not talking about if you adopt this philosophy. I'm not telling you to do things dangerous. Like, don't do dangerous things. But I'm just saying it's like, you know, pushing yourself to see things differently or do things differently in a way that's comfortable with you, that you can handle. So, yeah, there's my disclaimer.
Okay. So going back to your previous comment, and you may have just described the answer, what is it that you're most proud of today?
What am I most proud of today in right. the world? Give me, there's so many things I'm proud of, you know, my marriage, all kinds of things. Give me more of a
Well, you can answer it however you like, but you were saying that one of the cues to know that it's time to reposition yourself is if somebody asks you what you do and you're not super proud of your answer, it's time for repositioning.
Right. Well, one of the things that I'm most proud of is the business that I do, which is to help people come up with what I call the big sexy idea of their business, of their book, of their speech, of their show. I've worked on shows like TV shows and other things like that, you know, like whatever it is that they're doing. You know, I've worked with people in politics, you know, about like their ideas. Like when I tell people about that, they invariably say, how did you get that job? They say that. That's what they say to me, right? How did you get that job? And it's like, you know, I created that job. You know, because they say, I've never heard of that job before. And I say to them, you know what? Neither have I. I've never heard of that job before. Now, of course, you know, there are other people who there are a few people who like are kind of in a similar field. But like when I created this years ago, I had never heard of anyone who did this work that I do. So like I essentially for myself created a job I didn't know existed and that I had no one to call upon, like in order to tell me how to sketch things out or something. So I make a very good living based on something that like a concept that I created. Or again, there are other people now in that kind of field. But again, where I was at that time so many years ago, I had no idea that anything like this ever existed. Right. So I'm very proud of that, to answer your question.
As you should be, creating something new that you didn't even know existed is quite remarkable.
Right. Well, and I think it's, you know, and for your listeners out there, it's kind of like sometimes we gravitate. I know this is true for me. Sometimes we gravitate towards things that we know exist already, you know, like certain job titles or certain concepts or so, and we think like that's where it is we should be, but you don't have to be there because there's things that are out there that haven't been named yet, you know, and you can go to places that haven't been named yet. I remember, you know, I'm old enough, I'll be 55 in a few months. I'm old enough to remember years ago, like having been in the book industry, I saw every new concept that came out. And a lot of these concepts people thought were the live all and end all of everything. And I'm talking about like concepts like re-engineering. It's like, oh my God, that's going to change the face of everything. Or quality management, or management by objectives, or like all these different things. And I'm not saying these things aren't still around, but now they're just one tool in people's toolkit. You know what I mean? Whereas before it was looked as like, oh my God, it's essential that you do these things. And so I'm used to seeing concepts that that people thought were the cat's meow, like kind of recede. And as I'm sure you have too, as I'm sure your listeners have too. So like it kind of shows me that ideas and reality and things like that are more malleable than we think of. You can create things that aren't there yet. You can change things that are there yet. Things that you think of as total truths right now may be shown to be falsehoods in the near future. Things that you think are absolutely wrong now may be shown to be true. You know, so reality is much more changeable than you imagine.
Right, but it very much ties into what you do with trying to identify a big sexy idea and name it.
Right.
Right? So
that's exactly right, yes.
So that being said, for people who are in the thought leadership space, who are, you know, people, particularly people that have been in business for a while and at it for a while, if they're really struggling exactly with the kind of syndrome that you've described, where they're not super proud of what they're now saying they do, and they have dreams that they want to fulfill, and they don't feel like they're doing a great job fulfilling their dreams for themselves or for the people they serve, you have a way of helping people fulfill their dreams through identifying and articulating this big sexy idea. Are there some tips you can offer listeners about maybe how to think about what it is that they are good at and where they are that may help them either ask themselves some key questions or maybe think about some ways to maybe reframe what's going on inside their head that might help them do a better job of fulfilling their dreams.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I have lots of different ways. So one way, and this is assuming that people are kind of in the right area that they should be. Although right. sometimes I work with people and we change the area they're going to be in. That doesn't happen too often.
Right. But yeah, I'm assuming that they're probably going to stay somewhere close to what they've been doing. It's just it's time right. for some kind of shift.
Right, right. And so one exercise that I give people is, and I think I first learned this from a friend of mine, Michelle Naray, and it's the idea of I first have them about their business or about the book they're writing or their speech they're going to give or whatever it is. You know, I say to them, imagine the client, but they're not your client yet. They're just someone in the world and they're having a specific kind of problem, right?
Right.
Like, how are they going to be describing that problem? What are, you know, how are they going to be talking about it? You know, I'm actually going to change the exercise I'm going to give to one that I think is even more doable for a listener right, you know, here and now. And it's the idea of you have a business, you have a book, you have a speech, whatever it is you want to do. Pretend that the listener, the person who you're trying to sell to, that they know nothing about your business or your book or your speech. They don't know anything about it except the category that it's in. Oh, it's on business productivity. Oh, it's on how to sell or whatnot, right? You know, they just know the category, like, you know, that business fits in. Oh, yeah, that person's a management consultant. I got it. Oh, that book's about business productivity. I got it. Whatever it is, they don't know your specific work. They just know the category. So I want you to list all the things that the assumptions that person out in the world who doesn't know your work yet is going to make about that category. It's like, oh, yeah, management consultants. I know what these people say. I've been around management consultants. They're going to tell me X and Y and Z, you know, different pieces of philosophy, the ways you charge, the way you built, like just all the stuff that someone's going to assume based on your category. That's one list. List as many things as you can on that list. The second list is now a list of differences. It's like, okay, people assume there's stereotypes about your field or about your book or about your speech, you know, based on its topic, but now write down all the differences, all the things that are true for you, but they're not part of those stereotypes, right? Makes sense? And so from listing differences, people often come up with something that we can use to start shaping in their big idea. But a key point to that, again, is you have to think what obvious is or what ordinary is first before you think about differences. So what stories do you have that other people don't know about? What ideas do you have that other people don't know about? What insights do you have that other people don't know about? And not all of those are going to be of equal strength, but one or two of those like may start pulling at you. And from that, I've had people create entirely different businesses just from that one exercise.
Yeah, and I can see how listing the stereotypes first is really important.
Right, right. Well, and a key part of this, by the way, is you have to be like super honest. Like when you write down the differences, not all your differences, first, you're not different in every way, but sometimes the differences come from looking at things like, for instance, sometimes people will say, I'm remarkable at my business. You know, they'll list that as like a difference or something like that. They'll say, I'm remarkable. And I'll say, you know what? I believe that you're remarkable at your business, but show me what I'd see if I followed you around and I saw you being remarkable. you know, what would you be doing? What would you be thinking? What would you be saying? Like, what are those things? Write those down. Some of those may be differences, and we might be able to use some of those differences and blow them up in big, you know, wild ways in order to create a new business around. But if you just keep them all like subsumed under the idea of remarkable, you're not going to learn anything about that. You know, like that, by the way, is another exercise that I do with clients. If they have their own businesses, I actually go through their website with them, not overly critical, but I read their website to them aloud. And I talk to them about what it is that I'm hearing, what it is I'm seeing. And invariably, when I get to some word that's too abstract or too grand, I'll say, great, tell me about this word. Like you say, you help people become super productive. That's awesome. I bet you're amazing at this. So like, how do you help people get super productive? Like, what would I see? What happened in their lives that would show us that now they're super productive? And often when they start talking about it, it's like, bingo, that thing you just said about that person, that thing, let's start, you know, operationalizing around that idea there that was contained within. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. Mark, what can we look forward to from you in the near future? What's coming up?
Well, I just started, as part of my Do What Scares Me program, I just started working on a new book. But I've only been, you know, again, I started working on a week ago. So but I'm working on it very regularly now. Won't come to fruition for a while. And by the way, it's not that writing scares me. I love to write. It's that taking on the commitment of a full book, you know, that takes months and months to write. It was like, okay, I got to do this though. So that book is what I'm most excited by now that I'm working on. So I don't know if that's a good answer to your question. You said, what can we expect from you coming up? You know,
That is a good answer, and it's an honest answer.
Right.
And
exactly.
For listeners that may be interested in learning more about you and following you, how can they do that?
Yeah. So my website is levyinnovation.com. That's L-E-V-Y innovation.com. And I have blog posts. I have free eBooks there. By the way, if you go to my site, you don't even have to leave your contact information for some of the stuff. The very first thing on my site is an eBook called List Making as a Tool of Thought Leadership. It shows you when you're trying to create a new business or differentiation for a business you have, or you're writing a book or speech, it teaches you a simple list making technique that I came up with that helps you look at your topic from 10, 12, 15 different angles. It asks you to make lists about things like what's obvious about my business, what's surprising about my business, what can people do after working with me that they couldn't do before working with me, and so forth. And you just make these different lists and you fill them out and you look from list to list and item to item, and new ideas just pop up to you. Edward Tufte from Yale said, the act of organizing information becomes an act of insight. So just by making these lists and moving the stuff around, stuff just pops for you just by organizing it differently than it's in your mind right now. So that's one thing I would urge people to do, to go to levyinnovation.com and download that ebook.
Sounds like a great tip. So thank you for that. Mark, thanks so much for coming on Smashing the Plateau today, sharing your own story about finding your big sexy idea and giving some great tips about how listeners can find their big sexy idea. It's been a great discussion.
I'm grateful that you've had me on. Thank you so much.
My guest today has been Mark Levy, the founder of Levy Innovation. Thank you again, Mark, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.